Hello, and welcome to the monthly comic spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mann. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics, one from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. In this monthly comic spotlight, I'm joined by James, and we're going to be discussing some of the comics we got in July 2021. James, how you doing tonight?
I'm fantastic. How are you doing, John?
I am doing well. Now, I got, I think, 87 comics for a total cover price of, I think, $380.13. Now, fortunately, I'm getting these things at a discount because, man, some of these prices are getting a little steep.
They are getting steep, and I paid a little bit more than you because I received 113 comics, which was probably my largest shipment of the year.
Well, I got one of my largest shipments just this past week where I got like 27 comics.
Yeah, that last shipment, it was out of control. I think I hit 30, 32 or something like that. It was just a lot, and I guess that was because it was Comic-Con week.
Such as it was, I mean, Comic-Con was Comic-Con at home.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I already put up the episode on that. It was a non-event.
Yeah, I pretty much listened to you guys, and it sounded like, even going to the booths, it sounded like it was just not set up very well. You're like, just go to YouTube and you can watch it.
Well, you can see all the panels on YouTube, so what's the point of really, you know, other than saying, hey, you should check this out, and other than Doctor Who, I don't think there were any that qualified for that. And really, for the booths, it was an unglorified web crawl.
Yeah.
You
that
know?
Doesn't sound fun.
There's nothing you can't do if you just wake up one morning and say, you know, I should go to DCComics.com, I should go to MarvelComics.com, I should go to, you know, wherever.com or .net or whatever they've got. That's about all they had.
Yeah, it's kind of sad. I mean, the pandemic and all that, I understand, but this is 2 years in a row where it's been that virtual Comic-Con, and it just hasn't been the same. Not very good.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you give me a decent web developer and, you know, a month or two of their time, and I'm sure I could come up with something as good or better.
That lets you know how much time and effort they put into this, I guess.
And I get that they were hoping to do a, you know, face-to-face kind of a thing, but they missed an opportunity. And I think it's going to – it puts the relevance of Comic-Con, I think, in serious question.
Yeah, I can understand that. And actually listening to you and Kay, I listened to the episode. Yeah, I could hear it in your voices. You guys are just kind of like, we did it, and just kind of went through the motions just so you could kind of report on it. But yeah, it didn't get me excited and make me want to run out and look at the videos.
I barely bought anything. And since then, Hasbro has made a couple of major product announcements that are already for sale that I've pre-ordered and such, that in another reality, had there not been the pandemic, had Hasbro not been doing its own virtual thing for the last year and a half, no doubt would have been the Comic-Con exclusives.
Yeah, that would have been it. People would have been lined up at the place trying to get one.
But it was so much easier for me to just pre-order them this way, so I'm okay with this.
You're like, I don't want to stand in the line in the mass of the crowd and probably catch a cold while you're there, or who knows what else.
Well, I've stood in that line to get the exclusives, and often it's, I'm sorry, we're out for today. Come back tomorrow. 4 days running. And then at the end, it's like, oh, you know, you wander by, you bemoan, you couldn't get it, and they're like, oh, we still got some. You want one? Like, what the hell did I stand in line for? Or it's like, we sold out and you're never going to see it again kind of a thing. It's just exercise and frustration.
That's the worst.
I'm not a big fan of exclusives, just on principle.
Yeah. I know when they do those comic exclusives, I'm like, I'll pass. I mean, if you want it that bad enough, you can find it on eBay from somebody at a, you know, inflated price.
Yeah. Yeah. Rarely do I want it that bad, but I will admit I've picked up some stuff on eBay for not cheap prices, but I wanted the thing, so, you know, there's that.
Yeah. Time is money, and sometimes I'll pay a premium so I don't have to stand in that line for 4 days.
Yeah, yeah. It's the convenience factor sometimes.
Exactly.
Either I can't physically get there, or I don't want to spend the time, or I saw it and I want it, so let's be done with it.
Yeah, definitely. So, how many did you get from DC this month?
From DC, I got 35 comics for a total cover price of $164.65.
See, I never have the price, but I got 29 DC comics, so I received fewer than you did, but I already know some of the titles you're getting that I don't get.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's start with the ones that I liked.
All right. Which ones did you like?
Unsurprisingly, Nightwing was at the top of that list.
Yeah, Nightwing was the best. It was, I would say, it was the best of the DC proper stuff, because there's something I liked almost as much, which is Nice House on the Lake. Eric got me caught up. I got issues 1 and 2, but as far as like DCU, Nightwing is the best of the bunch. It was really, really good.
They had an interesting reveal slash kind of sort of retcon, but not quite.
Yeah.
Dealing with Nightwing's backstory. And it's interesting because it didn't really contradict anything I think we'd seen before, but it put a very different spin on a lot of those events.
Yeah.
And it could be a very interesting change to his backstory, and I think there's a good chance it'll stick.
I think it'll stick too, and I was going to ask you how major of a... I felt like it was a little bit of a retcon, but like you said, they didn't really change the origin story.
They changed how it's interpreted based on
what
we knew before. We now have a different way of looking at it, even though the same events happened.
And I really liked it. I thought it was really cool, and it was kind of dark a little bit because you almost, you know, like... You dealt with some abuse issues, almost like trafficking, it felt like. And then what came about from that, that was really kind of unexpected.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought it was awesome.
In the hands of a lesser writer, I might be a little worried, but Tom Taylor delivers. And I've got faith in him. This is, not only is it a good story now, but it's positioning things better in the future.
I would agree. I thought that was just terrific. And out of the superhero books, that was... hands down the best.
Mm-hmm.
And the only reason why I say out of the superhero books, you know, I probably would have given it a plus to the Nice House on the Lake as well, which is, I don't consider that really a DC book, even though it is a DC book. It's just a black label horror title by James Tynion.
Well, there's DC is published by, and there's DC Universe.
Yeah, this is DC published by. It's definitely doesn't tie into any of that stuff. And the thing that I liked about it, it was not like horror in the way that you think a horror book would be. It was more like Lovecraftian, you know, the thing that you don't see, the unknown is is the horror aspect. And it essentially the whole thing around it, the plot is people are invited to imagine a multi-million dollar home on a lake. And when they get there, it's so far out, there's no cell service. It's in Wisconsin, by the way. Yeah, no cell, which I'm sure Eric will love that. But there's no cell service, no nothing like that. And it's different people, you know, one's an artist, one's, you know, a chef, or one's a songwriter, one's this, one's that, you know, and it's almost a collection, a menagerie of people, but you find out the reason why they're brought there, things are not as it seems, and bad stuff happens outside of where the house is, and there's safety there, and it's kind of like, do you want to leave safety to see that for yourself? Do you? It's just like the conflicts with people there about staying and going and things like that. Really cool. So I say, that's why I say it's kind of like a horror, but you're not really seeing horrible things yet.
More like a suspense sort of.
Really suspenseful and consistent and very dark too. So, but I loved it. I thought it was really cool. And it's kind of like a virus takes place in the world, you know, I almost thought of coronavirus, but way more deadly. Very cool. Very, very cool.
Interesting. Cool. Are you reading either Static Season 1 or Icon and Rocket Season 1?
I wasn't. I hadn't picked them up, but I did pre-order the, almost like the omnibus, the paperback of all the old stuff from the 90s, because I hadn't read those. I got to see if Eric can get me caught up on them, because I just didn't know who in the heck that was.
Mm-hmm.
But how were they?
Static is up to issue 2. They're starting to change things up a little, but I'm still really enjoying the series. But cool. I think Static's always been a cool character. I mean, he had a 4-season Saturday morning cartoon show, so that says something for him, too.
Oh, nice.
And it was well done. And then Icon and Rocket is a good issue, but it's just starting to set things up. This feels like it's going to be essentially written more for the trade or whatever, but it's one that you need a little bit of time to really set the status quo, you know, the backstory for Icon to understand how things move from there.
So are they new reader friendly, these books?
Absolutely.
Okay, cool. The only reason why I say that is because I was picking up that big omnibus. I didn't know if I needed to know the characters already. And what I'll probably do is I'll probably will wait and pick up the trade instead of making Eric, you know, try to scramble around and find comics for me. I did that with the Taskmaster series that you really liked.
Mm-hmm.
And I got the trade and I read it. It was fantastic. I'm sad I missed out on that, but you reading it, you got me on board, and I picked up the trade, and I loved it.
Cool.
So I'll probably pick up the trades for both of these.
Well, both of these, I think, are following in the footsteps, you know, of what they'd done before. It's a little bit of a retelling. It's not a reimagining. yet it's not verbatim what they did before. You know what I mean? They're honoring and very respectful of what worked before, and again, making a couple of minor tweaks here and there.
Very cool.
So I'm liking the stuff.
Well, I'm definitely interested to check it out. So you got me interested enough to where I'm like, because you brought it up every month, I'm like, all right, I gotta see this.
Well, let me give you the elevator pitch for Icon and Rocket.
Okay.
Imagine Superman, except he's black and he landed, say, 250 years ago.
All right.
And, okay, so things didn't work out too well for him. Didn't work out horrible for him, but, you know, he never was raised with the I'm going to save everyone on the planet kind of mentality.
Okay.
Roll forward to today, and he's pretty much a rich recluse. He gets robbed, and one of the robbers basically, you know, he shames them if you shouldn't be doing this, all this kind of a thing. And she basically comes back the next day and says, you're rich. I saw you do things that a normal person can't do. You could set an example for people. Why aren't you? Basically, he had told them to step up, and she comes, turns around and says, you step up.
That's awesome. I like that.
And, you know, what if, you know, I don't want to say Superman was shamed into being Superman, but kind of, sort of.
Yeah, it's true. It's almost the speech of where great power comes great responsibility, but from someone who was actually not related to him and giving them the speech. That's kind
of
cool.
And she kind of becomes his partner slash sidekick or whatever. And Icon and Rocket was, I think, one of the better milestone books. And they had a really good run of books back in the day. Again, my favorite's Static. I just think the original Static very much captured the Peter Parker science geek superhero vibe kind of a thing.
Yeah.
So it's just some great stuff. And again, I think what they're doing now is on par with what they'd done before, just different.
Well, I'm definitely going to check it out then.
Yeah.
Now, speaking of Superman, did you read the new Superman, Son of Kal-El?
I did. That was one of the ones I wanted to talk about.
Okay, I'm curious because I actually, it's kind of weird. We don't have Superman anymore. Superman has ended, but we get Superman's John, Son of Kal-El. And it felt like a strong start by Tom Taylor, but you know, where's Clark in this? I mean, he's kind of written that off that this is years later. Robin even seems to be older. I mean, Damian, he seems older.
That was the thing, is I couldn't tell, is this set in the future? Is it set current day? Damian definitely felt a good couple of years older.
Yeah, he was way taller, and it didn't look like Damian. So I'm like, either he's aged, and I'm guessing, like, I was thinking 4 or 5 years, or I'm like, what happened here?
Possibly even a little further than that.
It could be. He could be 20, for all I know.
But it felt like it was told as in contemporary current day, so I was confused.
Me too. That was the confusing part for me. I was like, what's going on?
And it's one of those, I really want to like this new Superman. I like the John Kent kid, you know, both as a kid, as a teenager, etc. Cool character. Generally, I like the character. Generally, I thought this was an interesting title and stuff. It felt like he hadn't really earned the Superman title yet.
Yeah, it didn't. It felt like he hasn't earned it yet. I mean, we haven't seen the handoff. The handoff hasn't happened as far as I still don't know what happened to Clark. I mean, I'm assuming Action's going to deal with that. But the one thing I did like, I'd like you get the origin story with John, you know, during the invasion, you know, the fight. But like I said, it's just a little bit off. It's not something I love because it just felt like there was something missing from the story.
Yeah, yeah.
And I guess that being Clark, where is he? And when is this taking place? That's the only thing I had the questions. I was like, why is Damian so much older, but he's still young? Omniverse, I guess. I don't know.
It felt like this might have been something that was done for either the 5G stuff or something else and is kind of getting retooled a little for this, but not, I mean, reused for this, but not retooled for this. Let me put it that way.
That makes sense because they probably had a story where something happened to Clark and then this was new Superman taking over, and like you said, they rejiggered it to make it work.
Well, that's the thing, is I don't know that they rejiggered it, because I think Tom Taylor's a good enough writer, he could have put in either a couple of captions or changed a little dialogue to clearly set the stage a little better.
Yeah, I agree. So it was weird. I liked it, but I felt like there was something off.
Yeah, yeah. That's like I said, I wanted to really like it, and it was close. It just wasn't quite there.
Yeah, almost like a B+, A- type range, you know, somewhere like that. It's not great. It's really good, though.
It's not as good as it could have been.
Yeah.
And it may just need the first arc to get there.
I'm happy we're not seeing Superman slowly dying.
Yeah.
Like we were in the Superman book with Clark. That was kind of depressing.
Yeah, not what I need to read.
Yeah. So what else did you like?
You reading Flash?
I am reading Flash.
I think we finally get the new status quo for Wally.
Yep.
It's kind of convenient that Mr. Terrific just hires him right after Wally discovers he's having cash problems. It's like, literally, that's one page, and the next is Terrific hiring him, it felt like. Maybe there was a page in between, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
The issue is all set up for the arc. It's still a decent read. It just felt a little weird that they had to spend an arc kind of, sort of, but not quite, transitioning from Barry to Wally.
Yeah, that's what I felt like. It was almost like, it felt like a waste. It was a little bit, almost boring. Not bad, but I was a little bit bored. There was not a lot happened.
Yeah, I just think that they've had, for a couple of titles, an arc where it's kind of the spinning plates, buying time, and then the next arc is really, okay, this is their new status quo.
Yeah, that's where I am. I feel like, okay, we're buying time. What's going on? What's going to happen? And it's just kind of weird that it felt off a little bit to me, that issue too.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, one thing that I liked, and I like it more on the art, but the story's lagging a little bit, is I still like Wonder Girl, but I don't know where they're going with the story.
That one, the heavy overuse of the captions.
Yes!
The slow story.
It's very slow.
And it's like, it was nice to see Cassie as Wonder Girl, but it's like, the title's not really doing a whole lot for me.
It's not. That's the thing. It's like, I want to love this title.
Mm-hmm.
Because I like the character. I love the art in there. But the story is getting beat up. And so I feel like if you had the correct writer, am I correct? If you had a really good writer on this, you know, it could be like A-plus material. Wow, this is really good. Like when Kamala Khan first came out over mm-hmm. at Marvel. But now I feel like it's just kind of like headed towards a slow death, the way that they're writing it.
Well, and the future state really showed the potential of the character, and this title's not living up to that at all.
Correct. So that one's been a little bit disappointing to me. I mean, there are a couple others that I did like. One of them was I really enjoyed Robin number 4, even though it wasn't like an action Fight Club issue, but you got to see Damian with his grandpa. Did you like it?
Yeah, that issue didn't go in the direction I thought it would at all. It was fine.
Yeah, it was decent, because like, I like the character Ra's al Ghul, so I like to see him in there and just see him trying to coach Damian. I kind of like that. It wasn't great,
yeah,
but I liked it.
But I would say that has got to be the most atypical appearance of Ra's al Ghul ever.
Yeah.
And not in a bad way. It's just not what I think anyone who had any expectations of the character would have had in that, you know, for that issue.
Almost like the old retired doting grandpa. With his
Which
grandson.
Is so not what the character is.
Yeah! I was reading it going, I don't remember. I haven't read a lot of Ra's al Ghul, but I'm like, he's not supposed to be like this, is he? But it was kind of weird. But
no, not at all.
Yeah! But it was decent issue. It was kind of cool. But like I said, I don't know if that's the way it's supposed to be written, but
it's not.
I enjoyed it. Okay, so miss. Now, another one that I liked, but I don't know if you liked it. Did you like Action Comics 1033?
The main story was good. The other Kryptonian, that arc's starting to get interesting.
That's what I liked. I liked the main story.
Yeah, the backup I didn't bother to read. I just disliked the art, and it's like, yep, it's still there.
I refuse to read it. I won't read the backup. So I almost look at it as an overpriced comic. So it's something where it could be really good if it was just that comic. And quit giving me this other junk and charging me a dollar.
If it were the main story at $2.99, I'd be much happier with it than either $3.99 for just the main story, and certainly, you know, $4.99 plus, you know, including the backup, which just didn't work in for me.
Because I really like the story around the are they called Warhoons, and what they gave us what the chains mean, and I thought that was really cool too. So just getting the lore around them, I like that whole mythos that they're building out there. It's really kind of cool.
It's definitely starting to get interesting. It's just taking a while to get there.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the part I like. I like them building up to that. And then, anyways.
Now, I got two other titles I want to talk about, but they're not in the "Hey, I really liked it" category.
Are they in the "Hey, I hated it"? Because I have a few of those.
I don't know if I'd say I hated it, but certainly a few that I may mock mercilessly.
All right, which one are those?
Oh, we'll start with the one that I know you're going to share the opinion on, and then we'll go to the other one. The first title is Wonder Woman.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, that was pretty much my reaction. What happened to the art?
I said that on, I try not to go into detail on the Slack channel, but I'm like, what is going on? The art is just horrendous.
I would prefer to phrase it as a radical shift in style.
Rather than...
There may be people who really like that art style. That's fine. I am not one of them.
Yeah. I just personally, I almost look at it as like unreadable. I mean, it's not that bad, but I mean, it's really, for me, it's really, really, really bad. But, okay. And then besides that, the story where we're going into Fairyland now, I'm just like, the story's not working.
Oh, man. Yeah. When we got to 776, it felt like a knockoff issues of Fable done really poorly.
Really poor Fable stories with the squirrel being like the tent peg character going through time and the bad art on top of it. I'm just like, I've grown to where I almost have animosity towards the title now within the span of like a few months.
I really need to take a close look at the current round of solicitations because based on the two issues they released, 775 and 776 this time around, I'm like, I probably should drop the title.
That's the way I'm feeling. I'm like, it was just so bad that I was like, and it happened so fast because it started, I was excited. I was like, wow, they took Wonder Woman and they basically turned her into like Thor, female Thor. She's in Asgard. What's going on? This is 5G. What's happening? And cool story to, okay, we're going back to the Pantheon and with Zeus and everything to now we're in Fairyland and let's put the worst artist we have in the stable on this book. And I'm like, oh, okay, time to change. Time to move along.
I've been getting the title off the rack since around issue 300-ish, give or take.
Oh, wow.
So for me to say, you know, maybe I'm done with this.
That's a big statement.
They're making mistakes, I think.
Yeah, I try to look for a redeeming thing in this, and I can't find it. Anything.
Well, I think, again, there may be people out there that just love this, but it's a very different tone and style than what I would typically want in Wonder Woman, and certainly than what I would enjoy in Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
Now, there may be another book where, I mean, if that were like on Fables, I mean, it wouldn't be up to par with what Fables normally was, but it's like, okay, I can at least kind of see it.
Yeah, Fables had some deep, really good art in it with Bill Willingham and...
Oh, he was doing the writing.
The writing. I'm sorry, who was the artist? Can't remember his name, but the art in there was really good.
Yeah, the art was usually outstanding.
Yeah. Yeah, it's something's happened there, and like you said, I got to look at the solicits too and see if it's the same creative team because it went off the rails for me, really bad.
Yeah.
Now, what was the other one that you?
The other one I don't think you're reading, and it's a shame because this is one you almost have to see to believe in terms of subtlety of storytelling.
Okay.
Teen Titans Academy, specifically issue number 5.
Oh, and is it good or bad way?
We get a few pages into it, and they're going into the backstory of a couple of these characters at the Academy. And we're in Gotham, we've got Nightwing, and we're flashing back to the backstory of one of these characters. And how do we know we're in a flashback? There is a panel border around some of these things that is saying, flashback, 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 all the way around the thing.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm like, oh my god. This is not the least bit subtle. You can tell it's in a flashback, very obviously. And I'm like, this is clumsy. This is a writing or drawing crutch. Do they not understand the storytelling conventions of comics and the various ways of denoting a flashback? And what's even more ironic, or I'm not even sure what would be the word for it, is apparently the entire issue, other than the last page, is apparently a flashback based on the last page, where it then flips to the present day. Oh, that's what happened, sort of comment.
Oh, no.
So shouldn't all of the pages have had this flashback, 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 flashback border around them?
It sounds horrible.
it's one of those things that, you know, when you're reading, you just kind of ignore. It's like, okay, they don't know what they're doing, fine. But it's like, if that had been how flashbacks had always been done, okay, fine. But it's not. And then this whole thing at the end, it's like, yep, the semester's over or whatever. And I'm like, 5 issues in, I feel I've barely gotten to know these kids. The semester's over? What's going on here? We spent like a few days here.
Semester's over. We're moving on. Kids are graduating next arc.
I felt, well, I don't know if they're graduating. They've at least, you know, finished the thing or whatever.
Yeah.
I felt the Teen Titans Academy yearbook they did did more to establish one of the characters than the entire main title had done for any character.
That's kind of sad.
It is.
Wow. Just not good.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to look, who is the creator on that? The Teen Titans. Oh, we got Titans United. They don't even have it solicited in here.
They should.
Or is it called Titans Academy? Or what is it called?
Teen Titans Academy.
Yeah, I'm looking in the back. I don't know, unless it's on a different page.
I think for this one, it was Tim Sheridan as the writer and Steve Lieber for the artist.
Okay. Yeah, and the Wonder Woman, it's been Becky Cloonan.
Yeah, there are a couple of these where it's like, just what are they doing?
Yeah, it's not been good. Now, one other thing that I wanted to ask your opinion on, because there was some stuff that I'm just kind of like, okay, there's a lot of so-so stuff in here. Infinite Frontier.
Mm-hmm.
We got issues 2 and 3. Okay, one, I wanted to ask you, is that Black Lantern thing something that's existed, or is this something new?
That's existed since the Blackest Night event.
Okay.
You have not read Blackest Night.
No, and I have all the Geoff Johns and the Blackest Night omnibus. I have all that, and I still have not read it.
We need to do a back issue spotlight on that.
Okay, we'll do it.
We got to just schedule that one. I hadn't realized you hadn't read it.
I haven't read it. So I saw it, and I thought it was kind of like cool but weird. But what did you think of the Infinite Frontier 2 and 3, which are basing everything around? But the part that's bad for me reading this, like, I know this is going to be important stuff that you need to know. The questions will be answered here. But they jump around, you know, like you got President Superman and Earth this and Earth that. And they don't always tell me which Earth we're on or what's going on. So I get confused when I read these books.
For me, I was surprised that Harbinger was around. I think particularly for the second issue, it was very middle chaptery.
Yeah.
It's seeming more and more like a precursor to another story, specifically some other crisis. The whole multiversal mysteries to be solved. Because I had read that, the first DC comic of that week. So I read those, and I'm like, well, this just feels like a house ad.
Yeah.
And sure enough, I got to the other books. It is a house ad. And the thing with those kinds of, when they've got to flat out tell us the mysteries that are out there, one, not very subtle storytelling, two, not effective storytelling, and three, these things tend to have disappointing answers or quote-unquote payoffs.
Yeah.
They did one of these sorts of things where they had house ads that were splash page art type things during, I forget if it was Countdown or one of the previous Crisis type things. And it's like, okay, there's this character's cowl or whatever over there. Does that mean they die? This person's facing away. What are we supposed to read into that? Like it was a mystery painting kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And it's like, if that's how you need to get us interested in the mystery, tell a better mystery.
Yeah, please. Please now, tell a better one.
Yeah, for issue 3, I'm liking it, I'm not loving it. And again, we're seeing more of the old Earth 2 characters, more of the multiverse. I like that. I just don't have the faith in DC right now to think that this is going to, that they'll land the ending, or that there'll even be an ending at all. Again, I think this is building to something else. So I'm liking it, but hesitantly so, if you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, me, I can tell it's important. I don't know who a lot of these characters are because I haven't seen them, you know, from the other worlds and things. So for me, I'm like looking at it, I'm like, okay, who's this? Why is this happening? I don't know who this person is. So I get confused sometimes when I'm reading it, but I understand the concept and what we're going through. There's big changes. I just think they're building towards another crisis type event. And like you said, we've just gotten out of a crisis, I think. So who knows?
If they're not building to one, then there's a flaw in the story because it sure feels that way.
Yep.
And if they are building one, there's a flaw in the story because it's too damn soon.
It just happened.
Literally just happened.
Yeah. So just frustration around that book for me, even though it's not written horribly or anything. It's written well.
It's written decently. I think it could do better on accessibility. I think it plays better for somebody like me who's been reading DC for decades.
Yes.
And again, seeing a lot of the JSA type characters and other Earth 2 characters and some other stuff, it's like, these are characters I'm enjoying because I haven't seen in forever and a day. Not because they're brilliantly done here.
Just because they're popping up and you finally get to see them.
Yeah. So.
So basically, people steeped in continuity, it's a much better read than someone like me, I would think.
I'm hesitant to say yes or no to that, because I'm not saying it's a better read, but there's at least emotional nostalgia payoffs.
Yes, that I don't have.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, that's the part I'm missing then.
there's an aspect of the story I can get out of it that you can't, because, like, when Obsidian's saying, oh, you know, it's one of our villains or whatever, it's like, Oh, well, I know who they mean, because I'd read Infinity Inc. back in the day.
And I'm wondering, what in the heck?
And if you're like, what's Infinity Inc.?
Yes.
Or worse, you're thinking of the second one that was a Lex Luthor, you know, team or whatever, then yeah, you're not going to, yeah, yeah.
It's lost on me.
But that's something where you can't tell stories where people have to know things from 3 or 4 decades ago.
No, not without some way of getting me caught up, which would be really hard to do.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I feel like. I feel like this is an inaccessible book for me. So I read it and I just get frustrated sometimes.
But there are ways to make those sorts of things accessible. They're just not doing it.
I agree. So, yeah. And then I look at the rest of my list and there's a lot of stuff that's just kind of like so-so, some stuff that's not that good, but nothing that's really standing out to me when I look at the things I read.
Yeah. Shall we move over to Marvel?
Yeah, let's do that.
So for me, the highlight was definitely Fantastic Four.
I would have given that an A+. Fantastic Four number 34 was great, wasn't it?
Solid end of the arc. Feels like a major milestone for both the FF and Doom. And I'm really looking forward to the next issue, which is going to celebrate 60 years of the Fantastic Four.
I know. This was an excellent issue. And then next year we get the celebration, which will be really cool. I thought this was just like such a powerful issue with everything that happened. Seeing Doom, you know, being Doom at his best. The loyalty of his people, you get to see that. And just Johnny, how despicable he is. I can't believe Johnny. And I think the punishment fit the crime in this book.
Yeah, there were a couple of things where what Doom does and what is done for Doom, it's like, okay, this makes sense.
It does. So it's like, I felt like there was just a lot of powerful stuff behind this. While at the same time, Dan Slott didn't take himself too seriously, which is hard to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a nice balancing act. I think this is the book for Slott. This is probably the book he's made to write.
He's fitting on this so much better than he did on Iron Man.
Oh, so much better. I really did not like his Iron Man. This was really, really, really good.
Another one he did a really good job on a while back was She-Hulk.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. He did a really good job on She-Hulk.
Yeah.
Yeah, so very good stuff.
Now, the other one I really enjoyed was X-Men number 1.
X-Men number 1. Yeah, I enjoyed that too. I really liked it, and I was worried because you're going to Dugan from Hickman.
Mm-hmm.
But tell me what you liked about it.
It's a fun story. It's nice to see the X-Men back in New York City. And the Treehouse is probably the coolest new headquarters we've seen or I've seen in ages.
Oh, I love that. That was so cool. And you kind of get that layout where you can see inside the Treehouse. It was so cool.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you what, Pepe Larraz was the artist on this. He knocked it out of the park just with like the panel layouts. You know,
The two-page splash where we essentially get the tour.
Yeah.
Brilliantly done.
Brilliant. And like, I almost felt like I was reading the book, you know, how to do art the Marvel way as you're looking at Pepe Larraz doing the art. It was just so good.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought it was really cool. And it's basically the X-Men are going to be here for the United States, basically, or for the world.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of just being off in Krakoa, which I think we will all appreciate.
Yeah, yeah. I again, just fun issue. Really enjoyed that quite a bit.
Now, did you get on the new Moon Knight?
No, I did not.
Oh, okay. I thought that was a very good start. Moon Knight number 1 came out. It was Jed McKay who was writing it. And we get Moon Knight dealing with some vampires and others. And he runs into another worshiper of, is it Khonshu or Khonshu? I don't know how you say the name. Khonshu, I don't.
It's Achu. It's like you sneeze. I don't know.
Achu, yeah. So I think that's kind of cool because there's like a hierarchy in the religion and stuff like that. So some mythos behind that. I thought it was just a really good start. You know, whether it will be good issue 2, 3, 4, 5 remains to be seen, but issue 1 was really solid.
Cool.
Yeah. Do you want me to go through stuff I liked or you want to go first?
Let's see. What else? There were a couple other things that I thought were pretty good. Symbiote Spider-Man, Crossroads.
Oh, yeah.
It was a good issue. I just enjoy the whole Black Cat era of Spider-Man that it set in. That was kind of when I started reading.
Yeah.
And I was reading some of the Hulk stuff around that time. But again, this is stuff that is from, like, the early 80s.
Yeah.
So trying to put my mind back into what was the continuity back then? Not trivial, not easy.
Yeah, definitely not easy.
And then Sword number 7.
Oh, yeah.
Great story, moved a number of things along, and really, planet-sized X-Men seem to have changed the status quo that makes this title so much more important in the X-Men franchise.
I agree, and there's a lot of stuff that's going on over in Guardians of the Galaxy, which I'm not reading,
mm-hmm.
which I felt like they threw some stuff in here, but it made sense to me, which I really appreciated that I didn't have to read that title.
Yeah, I haven't been reading that title either, so.
Because you see, you get some stuff going on in there, but I thought it was really solid. Sword was a really good issue.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, another one that I really liked, Immortal Hulk number 48. I know you're not reading that,
mm-hmm.
but I love this issue because we get amazing, you know, issue considering there's a ton of action. You get gamma characters that are in hiding, and then they, you know, planning to save Bruce from the big, you know, what's going on there. You get emotional dialogue that goes on between the Hulk and Betty.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of hits you. And there's so many callbacks to the Peter David run, and I'm reading that right now in the book club. It's just really good. There's only two more issues before the team breaks up, but it's been a really solid run. Fun stuff.
Cool. Sinister War number 1. I thought that was a fun issue.
Yeah.
Not really sure what's going on with one of the plot lines and stuff, but I enjoyed the issue. It would have been nice to have gotten a clear understanding of kind of who was on which Sinister Six team and such. It got kind of crowded.
There were a lot of characters in there. It's like, holy mackerel, we're getting the whole rogues gallery.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a lot, but it was a fun issue. Now, another one that I really liked, which I know you're not reading, is Thor 15. You know, basically, I'm so happy to have Thor back after the Heroes Reborn event, fiasco, whatever you want to call it. And, you know, we get the follow-up on who Thor is and the hammer and stuff like that that they've dealt with longer. We're going back to that stuff, and it's just really, really, really good. And, you know, he starts talking about what it's like to be a god, which I thought was kind of clever when you think about immortality of a god-like being,
mm-hmm.
whether it be the Eternals or whoever. He said battles for him, he fought with the Avengers. He's like, that's trying to remember what I ate for breakfast like a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
Because he just experiences so much. So he's like, you talking about a battle that we were in, last week or 10 years ago, that's like trying to remember a breakfast because it's not a big a thing to him because he's I'm a god and I live forever.
One day out of hundreds of thousands or whatever.
Exactly. And you never think about it like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was kind of clever. So they're talking about that. I was like, kind of cool. And then another series that ended, which I know you weren't getting, was Beta Ray Bill number 5. It was a miniseries. The art is not going to be to everyone's liking. It's Daniel Warren Johnson, and it's kind of not clean lines. It's definitely messy. But it was an excellent miniseries, and it's a new weapon status quo for Beta Ray Bill going forward because of what's happened in Thor.
Interesting. That makes sense.
Yeah, so it's some really cool stuff there.
What else? I've already hit most of the major highlights for me. There are a lot of other things that were fine.
Oh, did you like Black Cat?
Black Cat, yeah, that was good. Do you have it in front of you?
Yeah, I can get it. The one thing that made me laugh is because we had just read the Infinite Destinies Black Cat.
Uh-huh.
With that whole event where there was nothing with the people.
Okay.
And then I read this issue. Like,
I read this, and I got to the end, and it's like, I would have liked to have had a footnote as to how that got situated that way, because it didn't seem to be that way the last time we'd seen stuff.
Yes.
Go to page 2 if you've got it.
Okay, pulling it out. Page 2. All right.
And there is a caption I made note of.
Okay.
It was, where was it? I think it was, I don't think there's a lot of captions on page 2, probably. There was a pretty major typo or mistake or whatever in it. And it's in the page where she's doing the swan dive or whatever.
Okay.
Last caption on the page.
Oh, but yeah.
The thing about the cat, ..
That's funny.
And you know what? It's like, okay, the letter of goof. That happens. The editors, the production people, they didn't catch it.
Yeah.
That's their job. Now, granted, it's the letter's job not to make the mistake, but safety nets.
Yeah. That's not a good sign for the editing team.
It's a nitpick. Overall, it was a fun issue. Other than when I got to the end, I'm like, wait a sec.
Nick Lowe, you let us down.
You know, this ends on a moment of, okay, cool. But in direct opposition to what I am seeing elsewhere concurrently in the Marvel Universe.
That's what I was thinking, too. I was like, I wasn't seeing that before. And the weird thing was, we just read that Infinite Destinies thing.
Yep.
And I was just like, and there was nothing about that in there. And now here we go here, in issue number 8, and we have something.
Now, maybe there's another title, and I can think of a particular one that I don't think either of us are reading, where something could have happened.
Yes.
But a footnote saying, hey, did you catch this over here, would have solved that for me.
And we did not catch that, and I do not know what's going on.
So lacking that, and having already seen an editorial goof in the issue, I'm like, I don't know.
not happy with Nick Lowe right now.
Yeah.
That's funny. Thanks for calling that out. I missed that the first read.
Oh, I don't like nitpicking and stuff. It's just the book has usually been so good that it did surprise me.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, some things that I'm not enjoying. I didn't like X Corp. I think I'm done with that book.
I thought there was a lot going on, and I like kind of the corporate look at the X franchise.
Okay, you like it.
The backup was fun. I just couldn't figure out what order to read it in.
Yeah, yep.
I'm enjoying it for the moment. We'll see how it goes. But I can understand it may not be forever.
Now, the other ones that I may be canceling is Alien, which I know you're not reading that. I was getting the Alien book. It's just not resonating with me. It's not that it's written bad. It's just I don't care that much about the Alien. I love the movies, but the Alien comic, it's just characters I don't care about.
There's some stuff that works better as a movie or something than on a comic book page.
I think this one works better as a movie. I'm just not feeling the comic. And then I actually didn't enjoy the Amazing Spider-Man annual that came out.
I didn't care for the lead story, and the backup is just moving too slowly.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. I was just like, yeah, this is not good.
And I'll be honest, the two issues of Amazing Spider-Man this month didn't work great for me.
They weren't for me either. They're so-so, and that's why I was like making a big deal. Oh, I sent in a clip, by the way.
I've listened to the clip. Yep.
For Amazing Spider-Man 75, no more Nick Spencer. Yay! And I don't say that to be mean, because I'm sure there's some people who like Nick Spencer.
I just don't think Spider-Man's working with him on it.
I don't, and I have yet to see anyone in the Slack that I've talked with, in the book club that I've talked with. He's not resonating with anyone as far as Spider-Man goes. So I think he's had a 75-issue run. Thank you for all you've done. On to bigger and better things. But yeah, I'm happy. I hope Zeb Wells does a good job, but it's not who I thought they would have picked. Maybe he's a stopgap. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought they were going to go for kind of a rotating cast of writers and stuff, and more an ensemble thing.
Oh, that's what they're doing. I forgot. You reminded me. I forgot. That is what they're doing. I've forgotten all about that.
So he just may be one of many, and he's doing the first arc.
That's right. That is going on, and thank you for reminding me. My memory stinks.
No problem. Yeah, I thought this was not a good month for Amazing Spider-Man, and for a little bit there, it was starting to shape up for me. So
yeah.
It's one of many titles that I'm ready for the next creative team.
Oh, yeah. Can I shout out one other book?
Sure.
Miles Morales, number 28. It was the end of the Clone Saga, and I felt like it was excellent. There's callbacks to, Gwen Stacy when she died on the bridge. There's callbacks to that. They didn't, tell the same story, but it was just really good. I think Saladin Ahmed has a good voice for Miles. The story he's telling is excellent, and I'm on board for the book right now.
Cool.
So I'm going to be cutting a few and adding this one up for, going forward.
Yeah. Captain America 30, I think, was the last with Ta-Nehisi Coates as the writer.
Oh, yeah, he had a big going away speech at the end, I read.
Yeah. Yeah, he did. And it's like, okay, he's at least been on long enough. I guess I get it, and he's a big enough writer. It's like, okay, but still, I always find that a little odd.
I almost think he's done with comics, because he's off there, and he's off Black Panther, too.
I thought he was doing something else somewhere.
Oh, is that what he's doing? He's moving on to a different book.
I don't know. I'm just ready for another writer on that title. I mean, he's a good writer. Just his take on the character wasn't working great for me. It wasn't horrible, but...
No, it was like we had gotten that dark Captain America with the Hydra cap, then we went to Mark Waid doing the palate cleanser, and then we went back down almost a dark road, even though it wasn't as dark as the Hydra cap thing.
This was kind of the brooding super spy cap.
Yeah, so it's a little bit darker. So it went dark, light, now it's back to dark again.
I want the cap that is the moral center of the heroic universe in Marvel.
He almost is supposed to be like the Clark Kent of the Marvel universe. Not exactly, but kind of.
He's the Superman. I mean, not the Clark Kent. He's the one that...
The Superman, yeah.
If Cap says this is the right thing to do, everyone's going to, well, yeah. But if you're like, I don't know, and that has merit, then they're writing Cap wrong.
Yeah, he's been kind of like a morally, this is good, this is bad, a black and white...
Well,
not necessarily black and white.
Yeah, he's not always black and white. He's the moral compass, even on confusing and nuanced issues.
And characters listen to him when he makes a decision.
Yeah. Natural leader and the rallying point for the superheroes and such.
And he hasn't been that through this run.
No.
Yeah.
And this is not, again, the first time he's been that way. There have been other times where some really good writers have been on the character. I'm like, I'm just not feeling their take on it.
Yep.
Mark Waid had a run where his whole thing is Cap's the man with a plan. And I'm like, Cap's a natural leader, but I don't think of him as the man with a plan like I would think of Batman or half a dozen other characters. I think of him as the one that is more instinctively, this is what we're going to do, this is going to work, and you guys are going to follow me.
I would agree.
But once, and I think it was maybe Kurt Busiek who had at one point had kind of explained, well, you know, here's why that's the right take kind of a deal, or a legit take. It's like, okay, I can see it, it's just not what I was thinking.
Yeah.
And it was a decent run, but again, for me, the Mark Gruenwald era of Cap is just one of my favorites.
Yeah, that was excellent stuff.
Trying to think if there's anything else I really want to mention.
I mean, I hit most of the highlights on my end. I'm looking through it.
Yeah, I think so, too. I mean, there were a lot of that were just fine.
Yeah, that's what some average books, you know, the C category or whatever.
Yeah. Move on to the others?
Yeah, let's do that. So this was, once again, my biggest thing, which, and that's part of it, my fault, and I cut some things, but I added some things, and one of the things I added I really didn't like, and I was stuck with it.
That sucks. I did one of those, too, and I'm like, oh, man.
Mine was expensive. Did you get Skybound X? I don't think you did.
No. I saw that, and I was like, I don't need that.
What a mess. I ordered it, and you know, I ordered it blind because they all four came out in the month, and it was just a fun. For me, it was a monstrosity.
Four? I thought there were five of them.
Oh, maybe there's another one coming in the next shipment. I honestly...
Something to look forward to.
Yay. Okay. No, but I mean, you basically get the zaniest, wackiest story of Walking Dead that you can ever imagine, where they're walking around with lightsabers and there's zombies and then there's spaceships.
Well,
and
it's a take on what they did in number 75,
yeah,
where it was, you know, aliens and stuff. And that was basically off a comment he had made early in the book of, you know, because somebody was saying, oh, you've told too much too soon, you've given away, it'll never last. Like, well, if it makes to 75, you're right, you know, I'll have to go with aliens or something like that. So, you know,
yeah.
75, you did a backup feature of that, and yeah.
Yeah, just imagine them walking around with white lightsabers and having, they're basically like cyborgs and stuff. It's just wacky, zany, you know, not really fun. And then it was an anthology, and some of the books that they were representing, I read the books. They were horrible representation of the book. It was by the creative teams, but they were doing these like weird cutesy stories, which would not get me engaged to read the main story. And I'm reading the main story, and it's really good. And I'm like, man, this would make me not want to read that book. So I don't know why they did that. And some of them, my overall anthologies, there's some that were okay, some that were not okay. And it was just expensive, and I just was unhappy with my entire purchase. I wish I wouldn't have gotten it.
Yeah, there was one that I'd got. Was Siphon, and it's not that it's a bad book, it's that I'm squeamish, it pushed a few buttons early on for me, and it's not for me.
Yeah.
It's only three issues, though, and I'm pretty sure I've pre-ordered the other two. But, you know, them's the breaks.
Yeah, it happens. I mean, now, was there anything that you really liked? I'm sure there is.
Yeah, actually, Star Trek Year 5.
Oh, okay, cool. How was that?
Now, with issue 22, seemed to be the start of the final arc of the series. The whole bit with Gary Seven worked so much better for me since we'd recently reread the first arc of the series, so thank you for that. Otherwise, I would have been like, huh?
No worries.
And then in issue 23 that also came out, we got to see just a quick cameo from one of the characters from the animated series back in the 70s or whatever.
Cool.
It was just a fun issue, and there was a cliffhanger ending. It's like, okay, you overplayed the hand. Yeah, that looked like it was really going to be a big deal, but it can't be. And I loved how through the issue, various things from the series, things that had happened in the early issues, things they'd done later and stuff like that, all started pulling together. And it's cool. Like, oh, we can do this because we know this and we have that, and, you know, and it gave it a cohesiveness without feeling contrived, at least for me.
When we reviewed that first, I guess the first arc or volume of it, it was really good. It was a fun story.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm glad it's still keeping up, you know. And actually, there's another Star Trek that was coming out in the solicits. I think that was the Mirror Universe War.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that one. That should be fun.
I'm assuming you'll have a clip for that, won't you?
Maybe. I don't know, actually. Maybe not. Maybe.
It remains to be seen.
I haven't recorded my clips, so there's a really good chance I might at this point. Matter of fact, actually, I take it back. It's on my list to do a clip for.
Yeah, I saw that, and the first thing I thought of was like, man, John's going to like this.
Yeah, there were one or two things. It's like, James didn't do a clip for it. I better. And, you know, that was a different one that fell into that category. But, yeah.
I think I know what it is, too.
Yeah. Hope so. We can check afterwards.
Now, what else did you like?
Resistance Uprising. Man.
Oh, yeah.
Really great look at how the government would kind of handle the existence of superpowered people.
Oh, my gosh. That was one of my favorite issues this month.
It was depressingly believable.
It was. I mean, I felt like I was watching reality. You know, it's an awesome series from Straczynski. But yeah, the government, because we had McCarthyism that happened in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened with that? We've seen what happened during World War II with that, and the rise of nationalism and stuff like that.
I kind of want to see a TV show. You know how they have, you know, the agents going and tracking down the bizarre, you know, events that are going on and stuff like that to get to the truth and stuff? I want to see that kind of take on a world that is kind of like, you know, the Marvel Cinematic Universe or the CW DC Universe. Or, you know, basically you've got superpowered people coming about and you've got people tasked with find out who the hell they are and get them under control.
Yeah.
You know, and it could be a lot of fun to play because a lot of the conceits of superhero, you know, those tropes and stuff, the secret identity and those things made sense back in the 40s, maybe even the 60s. Today, not at all.
Not at all. And I'll tell you what, Straczynski had a long-term plan that he laid out with us. He's a fantastic writer.
Oh, yeah.
And it brings you back to, you remember that main character in the first arc who kind of had like this, you know, like almost like Professor X, could talk to everyone mentally, mm-hmm. kind of connected everyone, and how key that was here with what's happening and we're seeing in this book.
Mm-hmm.
And how that could have been counteracted. It's just amazing how it's playing out. And I can so see this happening. And it's depressing, yet reality, and yet exciting, and yet I want to read more.
Yeah. He's doing a really good job with that. He's writing the Telepaths one too, right?
Yes, he is.
Now, my assumption is that's a different narrative universe. But given what he did with Telepaths in Babylon 5, should be a lot of fun.
I think it's going to be fantastic. I've pre-ordered it already.
Yeah.
Yeah, good stuff. And he's doing that Moths too, mm-hmm. which I think Moths is good. I didn't like it as much as the Resistance. But are you reading Moths as well?
I am. I thought that was a very JMS kind of a twist on a particular power.
Yes.
He also did Rising Stars.
Okay.
And it was another one with superpowered people and stuff like that coming about and whatnot. And there were a couple where again, I really think he's a terrific writer, but there are times where he gets this, I'm smarter than you and I'm going to show it, coming across in his writing. Whether that's intentional or not, I hope it's not. Because, I mean, he is a crazy smart writer. There's no two ways about that. But there are a couple of times where he's just trying to be a little too clever for his own good, or he needs to make the reader feel better about themselves as he's doing it, I guess.
That makes sense. And I can see that happening with this book, because there is some cleverness in here. But the whole concept around the Moths, where you have this latent ability, you don't know what it is, and you could turn it on and shorten your life, but maybe help mankind. And are you willing to take that risk? I don't know if I would do it.
Well, yeah, because you turn it on, starts essentially a 6-month countdown before you die, because you burn out from the power, and you don't know until you've activated it what it is, and it may even take a few days into it and stuff.
Yeah, you could have a lame power, like turn it on and have x-ray vision, you know. Mm-hmm. Oh, great, that's wonderful. That's it. And you literally threw your life away, but she's taking a risk by doing that. And I thought it played out clever. It was kind of nice.
I need to reread some of the earlier stuff to remind myself of kind of the rules of that universe. Because Moths, again, have that 6-month countdown, but other people just have the power, and there's no, it's going to kill them in this point in time, I think.
Exactly. They almost have it, and they don't have to do anything, and they have the power almost forever, it seems like.
Because there was a bunch of characters introduced in Uprising number 4.
Correct.
And there's one in particular where, yeah, very powerful, but if only for 6 months, that'd be a downside.
Yep, I agree. So, excellent stuff. I think he's doing a good job at AWA. He's come out with some cool stuff. And it's something that I think will, if people haven't jumped on it, there'll be some hardcovers or some trade paperbacks they can pick them up and they'll read excellent.
Yeah, I'm just curious how long this universe is going to go for.
Yeah, me too. I hope for a long time, but I'm worried that it won't.
I hope so, but there have been some other universes that were a lot of fun. Project Superpowers and a few others that they went for a bit and then they just stopped.
Yeah. Humanoids had one. I can't even remember what it's called now.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I know. You know what? The H1 or whatever.
Yeah. We were reading it and then it just, it came and went. It was gone. Yeah.
There have been enough of these. I think Overstreet's doing a book on lost universes.
Oh, yeah. Perfect.
And there's a ton of them.
Yeah.
Milestone, up until its revival, was one of them. The New Universe is another one. I mean, there's countless.
There's just so many.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Well, now, two comics that I wanted to point out that I really liked, which I know you're not getting. One of them we're going to be reviewing. It was the final issue of Shadecraft for the first arc. Not final issue, but the final issue for the first arc. And it was a solid ending to the arc. Some nice teen-ups, some nice surprises. I'm not going to speak a lot because of the review, but I think you'll enjoy it. I don't think it's as good as the first book they did. Skybound? No, what it's called? Skyward?
Skyward, yeah.
But it's good in its own right. So, good creative team. They're doing solid stuff. The other one, which I really enjoyed, but I think I'm going to enjoy the next issue more, is Department of Truth 11. And the reason why, this was the wrap-up of a Bigfoot, Yeti, Abominable Snowman, whatever you want to call it, Bigfoot arc, and how it came into being, and you know the thought process behind that, and how it was like kind of a joke, and how it became reality, and it's still going on to this day. And so they literally have to hunt these creatures down because people keep believing and spreading Bigfoot rumors. And he's like, not all the loose ends were tied up in this, and I think it may come back to bite them. But the next issue, or the next arc, is called Ruby Ridge. And I don't know if you remember that. I think this will be a very powerful one. For this
Interesting.
Series. Yeah, so I think that'll be good. Now, there's some more I want to talk to you, but I want you to go.
One of the ones I want to mention that I really enjoyed was Seven Swords number 2.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Now, this did a really good job of introducing a couple more of the various swordsmen and women and such. Now, there was a ton of exposition, but I kind of needed it because I don't really know some of these characters that well. And they balanced it with some examples of this is the character being the character, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So I'll allow the exposition because it was a good read regardless. And there was just some really solid dialogue in the issue, a couple of really good zingers here and there. So I'm enjoying that. And it was one I just picked up on a lark thinking, okay, I'm curious about it. And it's essentially a team-up of the great swordsmen of the era, you know, with D'Artagnan, Cyrano de Bergerac, Don Juan, a couple others, and there are a couple that's like, I don't know who they are, so please tell me, and they are.
Very cool. So you're liking it?
Yeah, it's fun.
Cool, cool. One of the other ones that I really liked, which I know you're not getting, it came out from AWA, it was Fight Girls number 1.
I am getting that.
Oh, you are getting it! I thought for
it's
sure
Frank
you were.
Frank Cho!
Frank Cho, I love Frank Cho. Oh, so what did you think of Fight Girls?
I thought, great art, gee, unsurprising.
Yeah.
Lot of action, enough story to hold it together. And the guy is just a phenomenal artist. I really enjoyed Liberty Meadows back when he did that.
Yeah.
We're sorry to see that go, so yeah.
It almost felt like, almost like a Hunger Games,
mm-hmm.
which I was really digging it. I was like, so you have beautiful women, Frank Cho doing the art, Hunger Games type setting. I was like, it is fantastic. I like the lore around it. And if I'm not mistaken, I think I saw this solicited a long time ago, and then it disappeared, and then it came back under AWA. So I don't know what happened to it originally, but I could have been mistaken, but I thought I saw something about it like last year, 2020 or 2019 even.
Well, if it was 2020, a lot of things went away and came back. Just, you know, that was that kind of year.
I think it was like a pandemic thing. Like it was like
hinted
it's coming out, and I'm so happy to see it out. And I thought it was just fantastic.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. It was good stuff. Yeah, he's like I said, terrific creator.
Well, I'm glad you're reading it. You're not reading Berserker, though, right?
I am not.
Yeah, don't read that. You're not going to like it because there's too much violence in it, but it's a solid story. It's pretty good. And some other things that are you reading Jupiter's Legacy?
I am.
What do you think of this?
It's a decent read, but at some point I think I just need to reread the whole thing just to get back into the universe.
That's how I feel. I feel like it's been too long, and I can't remember some of the stuff that happened earlier, even though I'm just watched the show on Netflix.
I haven't watched the show. I feel like I'm missing a lot of the story because of the lack of momentum for arc to arc, and my recollection of the original stuff is that I read it.
That's the way I feel. I'm like, this is cool. I like the story. It's too far away. I felt like I would have liked it more if I would have been reading like an omnibus of all the Jupiter's Legacy material. It would have read better.
Do you have the earlier stuff?
I do. In singles, buried away in boxes. But yeah, I do have it.
Maybe we do a back issue spotlight on it.
Hey, I'm completely good with that because I loved it.
Because I had been thinking about doing that and timing that for when my sister and I might go watch the series on TV.
Put it down, because the Blackest Nights I want to do, and I would also like to do Jupiter's Legacy, because I really did like that. Another one, if you don't mind, is Magic Order.
Okay.
Yeah, we're actually discussing what we're going to review.
So, listeners, please vote.
Yeah, please vote. Because Magic Order 2 is being solicited now for the Netflix show that's coming down the road.
Mm-hmm.
So, that could be cool, too. But, yeah. I think it could be really good. It's just the TV show, I want to see what you think because I had some opinions on that. So I'm looking forward to you and your sister watching.
It may be a while, both for us to watch it and even longer for it for the episode to get released.
But I tell you what, your TV reviews, they have an impact on my wife and I. We've watched Upload because of your reviews, and we're currently watching Longmire.
Cool. That's good to hear because I'll be honest, I've had a few that I've put up, and there are a few that I know were just kind of indulgent of me to do, but I've looked at the number of downloads those episodes have gotten, and it's like, yep, nobody cared. It doesn't happen often, but it does happen.
Yeah, I listen to them, the TV ones, because it gives me something to watch, and Longmire, I'm really enjoying it. I like it more than I thought I would.
Cool.
I thought it's a fun series.
Mm-hmm. What else did I get that was... A lot of these are just fun stuff. They're fine. I liked the Usagi Yojimbo number 21 with Usagi's cousin. Cool character. I'm having a problem with that in the colored series of reprints.
Oh, why's that?
Where I've got two Usagi stories kind of going concurrently at very different points with him.
Oh.
And it's like, wait, which one am I getting back into at this point?
Some confusion.
Yeah. It's hard for me to know which narrative, because like, yeah, they come out close enough together and stuff. Well, it's, you know, one every month and stuff that it's just, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of switching with the mind. Okay, I'm reading this one.
They're good. It's the context switching that doesn't work.
Yeah, now, that makes sense.
Other one I've got to comment on is Radiant Black.
Oh, yeah. How is that?
The story paused this issue to give the backstory on Radiant Red. Like, why call the title Radiant Black if you're not going to focus on the character who became Radiant Black in the first issue? Part of it is... I went into this with certain expectations. Oh, it's inspired by Sentai. Sentai is a team thing. He's doing, I don't want to say a modern superhero story with Sentai window dressing and stuff. I'm sure he's got a great grand plan and stuff. We're just in the early days that it's what I was expecting and what I'm getting don't always match. It's not bad. It's just, and I've still got this hang up of given the colors of the other character like Radiant Red, I keep feeling Radiant Black should be called Radiant White.
Oh.
Because the other, Radiant Black has a black costume with red in certain areas, where Radiant Black has a black costume with white in the areas Radiant Red is red, kind of a thing.
Yeah.
So, typically that would have been the white character, but, you know.
Not the case.
Not the case. My take on the Sentai, Super Sentai genre and his maybe differ a little. Huh. Not to say I'm right, because I may not be.
But it's just different.
Just different.
Well, you want me to tell you the other ones I liked?
Sure.
Okay, I know you're not reading these. Geiger number 4, it's Jeff Johns. Mm-hmm. It's still pretty good. It's not great, but it's pretty solid. Almost some Mad Max Road Warrior stuff going on in there. But a good artist, Gary Frank's doing the art.
Cool.
Gunho Anger is a good European comic that they're translating. And this is like the third series in the Gunho series about these, you know, misfit kids or orphan kids that are sent out to an outpost, and there's creatures out there that kill you, and hard to get supplies there. It's just a fantastic series. The other one that I would say is really good, let's see, is Nocterra, which is Scott Snyder, which is more, I guess you could say, like a horror type thing, a horror world that everything's dark and shadow creatures and things like that, and they're having to, you know, keep lanterns and stay in the light. But we finally get some light and a big change up, so I felt like this is like the end of an arc. It was really solid.
Mm-hmm.
And another one, which was like a brand new series that started, and I picked it up, was Ordinary Gods. You didn't get that, did you?
I did get that.
Oh, okay. What did you think of it?
That one, a little gory near the start.
Yes.
Big info dump when we get to now.
Yeah.
It's an okay story. I don't know if I'm going to keep ordering it or not.
That's exactly what I said. I said it was a solid one, but I said, that being said, you know, it was decent writing and all that. I don't think I'm on board. I think it's something that will read better as a trade paperback. I don't think it's going to read good in single issues, just the way it's written. And there's so much material that's going on here, you know, the world with 13 territories ruled by gods and different time streams. I'm like, that's so much going on that I think it almost has to be read as a book for it to be enjoyable for me.
I picked it up based on Kyle Higgins doing it.
Yep.
I think he's done some great stuff, but there are a few of the things, again, this in Radiant Black that he's doing, that it's not bad. It's not that it's not working for me. It's that it's not working as well for me as I had hoped.
Yeah. I know exactly what you mean, because I read this. I was like, it's good, but I felt like I'm not on board. You know, like, it was enough that I enjoyed the issue. I don't need to read anymore. But if I did, I'd probably pick it up as a book and read it, because I want to read it in singles.
Yeah, yeah.
That's how I felt about it.
And some of the stuff, it's not like it's a swing and a miss. It's just not a home run.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And then I had other stuff that was just closing out, stuff I already canceled. I mean, Oblivion Song, they keep talking, two more issues left. I'm like, okay, let it die. I'll see it through to the end. Mm-hmm. Not enjoying it anymore.
I've had a couple of times where it's like, okay, it's only got a few. What the hell? I'll write it out just to have the complete run.
That's where I am with a lot of stuff now. It's like, okay, it's a 5-issue mini. I feel like I'm in too deep. Okay, I'm seeing it out.
Yeah, yeah. Another one, Project Patron, I'm still getting from Aftershock.
Oh, yeah.
And it feels like the murder mystery plotline has pretty much been just thrown to the side. Now it's just the epic battle for the last, what I presume is the last issue. It's not bad. It's just not what I thought the initial pitch was.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm not reading that one, so... Yeah, you're not selling me on it.
It's not bad. It's just I was expecting
something
murder mystery.
And it's not that.
And I'm getting something else.
Yeah, so why read it?
Well, it's not why read it. It's just know what you're getting in for. And there's an art to soliciting a book that I think is lost.
Yeah, that's very true.
Because if I go in with certain expectations and they fit the book, I'm good. But if I go in expecting one thing and I get something else, even if that something else is brilliant...
I'm not going to be around.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I, you know, we were talking about Wonder Woman earlier, and the first thing I did is I went and I picked up the solicit, and I started looking at it. And, you know, there's some stuff written there. You know, who knows? Maybe I'll be reading it, but I don't know. Based on the solicit, there's not much there.
Mm-hmm.
Get me excited. So, yeah, there is an art to it, and if they don't do it well, people don't stick around or don't ever jump on board.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is unfortunate.
It happens.
It does. All too often.
Mm-hmm. So, as we record this, which is early August, August 5th, actually, it'll be another week or two before it gets up because I need time to edit it, and I'm lazy. No, I'm not lazy. I'm just busy. One of the other things I've been working on is Diamond actually released the sales data for June 2021.
Yeah, I saw that. That was really cool. You posted some stuff.
Yeah, it had indexed values, so it was actually useful. Obviously, DC's not included because Diamond no longer carries DC. And I had this posted on my website, comicbookpage.com, on August 1st. You can always go to the main page of the website, and if I've got a new set of numbers up there, I've got a link to it. I had taken that down for a while because it had been about a year since they gave anything useful.
Yep.
Because they didn't release any data from May 2020 through July 2020. They released unindexed data from August 2020 to October 2020, and then, like, nothing from November 2020 through May 2021. So I'm like, oh, I guess the numbers are done. And then, boom, out of the blue, it drops. I'm like, okay. So it took me a little while to spin my system kind of back up. It took a while to clean the data, because before, every month, it's like, oh, here's a new title. I've got to make sure, you know, this volume of Silk doesn't get mixed in with the last volume of Silk or Black Cat or, you know, what have you. And over the course of a year, that happens a lot.
Yeah.
And then I had to write some new code to deal with the fact that for a lot of the list, I didn't have any comparison data for most of the items.
That's true. The stuff has ended and there was nothing to compare it to, or new volumes that didn't exist back in 2019.
Or even in March 2020, the last data set. Yeah.
Wow.
So it's like, I can't do my usual, here's how many new, here's how many, you know, suspended and returning titles, none of that.
I thought it was just cool that we got numbers finally.
Yeah, I hope it continues. I'll be honest, I haven't made a firm decision if I'm going to just keep doing it if it comes out, because starting in the October releases, Marvel's moving over to Penguin Random House, so Diamond can only report on the data they've got. and that's if they continue to release data.
Yeah.
So just like DC's not included at this point, come October, Marvel would be included, but at a reduced rate.
I wonder what made them decide to finally release data. Is it? It's just weird.
I have no idea, and I hope they plug the gap retroactively, because it effectively forces June 2021 to be a new baseline.
Yeah.
You know, we can compare it to previous stuff if there's previous stuff of the title to compare it to. Even if there is, there's this awkward year-long gap.
Yeah, which is weird. And just out of curiosity, there's not going to be an episode with you and Eric and Sam?
I'm still working on coordinating stuff.
I've
talked with TJ. I've started talking with Eric. I just haven't gotten the stuff scheduled yet. So the plan is to do that, but it's not. We haven't set the date and time yet.
You have to tell TJ about our Slack channel, too.
I will make mention of that.
Yeah, I'd like to talk to him sometime.
I've traded a few emails with him. He is doing well.
Cool.
But it's one of those things. I just, you know, hadn't emailed him for a while because I told him I'd do it when I got the next set of numbers. And
they never came.
They came, so I emailed him, and I apologized. he's a good guy.
Yeah.
He seems to have weathered the pandemic well, so that's all I can ask.
That's awesome. Well, I'm looking forward to it. That'll be really cool.
Planning on doing that kind of stuff. It's just a question of, are these numbers still going to be relevant moving forward or not? I'd gotten enough flack over the years of, well, this doesn't include everything, even though it included everything that went through the direct market, which was pretty major. And now, admittedly, it doesn't.
It doesn't,
Not having DC at all, okay, that's problematic. But until Luna releases data, and they have shown no interest in doing that over the last year and a half, I don't have data to include. And then I don't know if Penguin Random House is going to release data or not. If I get data that's released and it is compatible with the other data I've got, I'll certainly include it if I can.
Hopefully it works out. I mean, I just thought it was amazing because, like, finally numbers popped up just out of the blue. No announcement, no nothing. Just boom, there they are. It's like, wow.
Yeah. Well, and I'll be honest, when they had released the unindexed stuff for those couple of months last year and such, to me it's like there's nothing to use there.
Yeah.
Ranked unindexed lists are useless for cross-month analysis. It'd be like trying to compare our elevation from sea level based on what floor of the building you're in you're at.
Which makes no sense, yeah.
Yeah, you're on the first floor, I'm on the second. That doesn't mean I'm higher than you. Maybe I am in Death Valley and you're in Denver or something. I mean, you're not. You're in Florida and I'm in Texas, but the analogy works, sort of.
Yeah, it's true. No, but that was really cool, and I appreciate your hard work putting that together because I know it's not easy.
Yeah, it took some doing. It's a good technical exercise, if nothing else. It's just a question of, do I want to invest the time in it or not, because it's a serious time sink.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, speaking of serious time sink, I want to do a quick shout-out and congratulations to Raging Bullets. They have released over 600 episodes.
Oh, congratulations.
Sean and Jim, the highlight of episode 600 for them was a two-part in-depth look of JLA-JSA crossovers from 1978 to 1980. Let's see, they covered Justice League of America 159, 160, 171, 172, and then in episode 601, they continued that two-part in-depth look, and they covered Justice League of America 183, 184, and 185 for that anniversary special of theirs. I've actually thought about doing the JLA-JSA crossovers on the back issue spotlight. It'd be a series I'd love to do. When they say they do in-depth looks, they are not kidding.
Wow.
They go very in-depth. They do some great stuff. Their episodes, typically not short.
Very long episodes.
But if you are into DC, I definitely recommend that podcast. So congratulations to those guys for doing it as long as they have been and getting 600-plus episodes out.
Definitely. I was just looking at it now. Yeah, their podcast, that last, it's a two-parter. It's like 2 hours long, one of the episodes.
Yeah.
That's a lot of material.
They tend to go 2-3 hours for some of their stuff, and it's they've got the content for that.
Yeah. Wow.
You know, but it's one that, because they go for that length, I don't have the time to be listening to those things. But what I've listened to, I've really enjoyed.
Good stuff.
So, yeah. Good guys.
Congratulations to them.
Yeah. Yeah. Anything else?
No, that does it for me, John.
Cool. The September previews came out on August 25th, and the deadline for preview spotlight number 166 is the morning of Saturday, September 4th. Recording clips for the preview spotlight episodes is easy, and we've got an open submission policy for these episodes. Please send in clips to support the comics you love as often as you can. If you'd like to get email reminders for the preview spotlight episodes, you can join the emailing list on the main page of the comicbookpage.com website.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.